Coach Marker, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks so much.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I'm excited to get to learn from you today. And with a lot of guests, I have some previous experience with, and with you, I know we've talked a little bit, but you know, I don't know a ton about you. And so that really excites me in a way that, you know, this is such an open book and open door conversation that I know I'm really excited about, looking forward to it all week. So the first thing I want to rewind from to when you first got the job. And so my first question is always, you know, what did the vision look like? I think for most of our guests, we can at least find different resources to help us through the interview process, and, you know, with lots of prayer and things like that, we decide whether or not we make the jump to be a head coach. But tell us about when you first accepted the job and like what your first 100 days were like. What did your vision look like? What did you want to accomplish? What were some good things? What were some things that you would change? Anything and everything. I would love for you to just open that up for us, and and we'll roll from there.
It's all intention oranges. That's where I'm at now. It's my fourth stop as a head coach. So I started off in a city league school, Independence High School in Columbus, Ohio. From there I went to Bexley, and then which is also basically in Columbus, Ohio, and then Upper Arlington, and then here. As far as the first 100 days at Orange, I was taking over a program that was in a really, really good spot with a really, really good head coach and Phil Callahan. So it wasn't as if I was coming in, and a lot of people say when you get a new job, you know, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to change the culture. I was just trying to sustain a lot of what they had done in the past and maybe put my own little spin on it. But there wasn't a whole lot to change in terms of, you know, the cultural things. The kids worked hard. They were in a really good spot in terms of knowing how to work. Good baseball people. He had a youth program established that we've just continued to try to build upon. So my first 100 days, I mean, I would say immediately just trying to connect with the kids. I think the relationships is a big, big piece of being successful and trying to get to know them on and off the field. I know early on, Coach Zeb Schroeder, who's the football coach here, had me come talk to the football team. And that was really exciting for me just because I think a football program kind of gets the year rolling. So the success of your football program and the success of your fall sports allows you to build on that in the winter and in the spring. So to get out there and get around those guys and then kind of watch them train. And I was just trying to get around the team, but also get around the school and the community as much as I possibly could to get a feel for, you know, how I was going to blend my thoughts and blend my ideas into what they've already done successfully. So it was really just trying to get to know the dynamic of the community, I would say.
No, I love hearing that. And you mentioned that you guys had a youth program. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So you'll see sometimes when we tweet, we'll say 8 to 18. We have Orange Baseball Club is a, say travel. I know travel's a loosely used term now, as far as every summer team's considered a travel team, but it's a youth program. It's everywhere. We have two teams at 8, I think, 2 at 9, 2 at 10, 2 at 11, 2 at 12, 13 and 14. I think now, I think we even have 2 at 14. So, and basically it's open to anybody in Olentangy school district. We have 4 high schools within our district. We're one of the 4, obviously. But we open it up to anybody and just trying to develop, you know, these kids into one, good people, but also good baseball players, and just try to instill some of the values that we have. So it's been really helpful as far as having that youth program and kind of put our vision into what they're doing and see if they can kind of, you know, develop these kids into where we want them to be in 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the road.
No, I love that. I love hearing that. And, you know, I've been at some different high schools, and I think that the lowest program we had, or the youngest program we had, was 8th grade. And it was really nice to just have them as 8th graders, just to be able to continue to build upon that. And there's I work with a guy who used to work at Jinx High School, and they, you know, one of the top football programs in the country literally every year. And so I was like, what do they do? Like, what do they do successfully? You know, they've got a good blend of all types of kids from different backgrounds. And they had a coach who was, you know, National Hall of Fame coach that he unfortunately passed away after he resigned a couple of years ago. And then they had another guy take over. And so Coach Farrell, who I work with, said, man, they get these kids in this youth program in like second grade, and they just continue to build on top of that. So by the time they get them in high school, they're so immersed in the offense, they can just teach them how to play the game. So they don't have to teach them how to, you know, how to learn different plays and how, you know, fundamentals of what their program is going to be about. It's just adding layers on top of that. And so I guess that piques my interest, because I think that that's a really neat way to be able to build the culture, but also continue to add layers to what you were establishing early on.
I think it's really tough in baseball, just because at least in Central Ohio, there's so many options, right? And for some kids, the best option is to go out and play somewhere else. I think we provide a valuable experience with our youth program, but at times kids want to venture out. And so like Tom Held, I know you've had him on the show a while back at Defiance, all of his kids in the summer play for him, but they also, some of them play out as well on the weekends, and he's in Northwest Ohio. So there aren't as many options for kids, but in Central Ohio there's 40 teams at each age level. So if you want to go play shortstop, you can go play shortstop. There will be a team for you to play on. So we try to provide value. You know, I always tell the kids, you can get baseball anywhere. And I tell our youth program coaches as well, you can teach baseball, or a kid can go get baseball anywhere. What do we offer that has more value than just baseball? And we got to keep pointing back to that and making sure we're teaching the kids the things that we want them to learn, and we're providing value beyond baseball.
Oh, for sure. I love that. So you get, I think it's really neat to hear that you did take a step back from the usual coaching stance of, hey, we want to change the culture. You recognize that there were some really good things that were already in place. And again, that we talk about adding layers. I think that's really neat, because I think if you had come into a successful program and said, hey, we're, you know, you want to put your stamp on it and with your personality, but also thinking, you know, did you take into account, like, did you talk to the players about what they wanted to keep and different things that they wanted to do, the assistant coaches? I don't know if they stayed or if you had to have a whole new staff. So I'd love to hear your process with the people who had already been there, especially the players.
So Phil Callahan, who was a former head coach, he teaches seventh grade in the same building that I teach sixth grade. So I continually bounce ideas off of him, and he's a huge resource for me. Matt Laddick was one of his assistant coaches, really cool. And he's still our assistant coach now. And then as far as the players go, I think we work so hard to give the players a voice that, and that comes through the, you know, building that trust. But the kids will tell you, if you open the door and you allow them to have a conversation with you, I think they'll tell you when things aren't right. I send text to our players now all the time, and I'll just say, hey, we're thinking about implementing this. What do you think? Or this didn't work. Why do you think it didn't work? I think kids, we say kids, but I mean, 16, 17, 18 year olds, they have a true understanding of a lot of things in life that as us as adults are still trying to figure out as it changes. So I give our guys a voice, and our assistant coaches have a voice. And what I was so happy about at Upper Arlington, I had a great coaching staff as well. But here, you know, Matt, I mentioned Matt Laddick. To me, he's like our head coach. So he's been a head coach before, and he keeps me even at times. I think I get up and down, and he keeps me even, and he does a really good job of that. And as well as our players having voices, our coaches have a voice, you know, and our guys will say, no, that's not right. I don't think we should do it this way. We go back and forth on a ton of different things. And again, I think it's the fact that we know we don't know everything as coaches, just in our own group, but we also know that the players can provide a lot of value if you allow them. So
no doubt,
you know, we didn't change a lot. So
oh, that's really cool. So let's fast forward to, you know, this off season. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing, and just, you know, give us your time restrictions, limitations, and what you guys are making, or how you guys are making the most out of it.
Yeah. So in Ohio, once Labor Day concludes, we're allowed to do 6-on-1. So 6 players to 1 coach, or it's really not 6-to-1. It shouldn't be called 6-on-1s. We call them 6-man workouts. So you can have 6 players, you can have as many coaches as you want, and you can do as many of those as you would like. So you can go 30-minute sessions with 6 infielders, then 6 infielders, and 6 infielders, and break it up however you'd like. So in the past, once that Labor Day hit, we jumped right on it. We got right into, okay, we're going to do a 6-man infield at this time. We're going to go a 6-man outfield group here, or 6-man hitting group here. And this year we kind of dialed it back a little bit and changed the phases of our years. So where you talk about like preseason and in season and postseason and summer league, we talk about it more in phases, as like our strength phase and our skill acquisition phase and our skill application phase and our competition phase. So right now we're just towards the end of our strength phase where we put a lot of emphasis on the weight room and just getting stronger. You know, as the cliche or the word or the saying goes, you know, strength is never a weakness. So for us, we're trying to get as strong as we possibly can. Right now we're concluding that phase now and starting to move into skill acquisition. So in skill acquisition phase, what we're going to try to do, a lot of our guys return, which is a huge benefit to us, but also with our incoming freshmen, just trying to get them to learn our system and how we go about our business and how we train infielders versus what we do in terms of hitting and just try to instill our philosophy. So I would say from now until right around winter break, it'll be huge on skill acquisition. And then we'll go into implementing and applying those skills that they learned into a more competitive environment. So we'll get into our hit league and more controlled bullpens and more competition phases and things along those lines, gearing up for the season. So, but with the six on ones, or people call them six on ones, I keep trying to, out of my philosophy as well, but in our six player workouts, it's really beneficial because it allows us to work with six players at a time. We do a lot of filming, we put it on huddle, we break it down, and then we try to use that information to develop an ippy dippy for our guys, which is basically our individual player development plans, where it has strength goals and it has academic goals and it has you know, if you go into the facility by yourself, here are the things I think you should work on before you get back into a six man workout. So that's kind of where we're at right now. But, and then our tryouts happen in February.
Cool. You mentioned off the mic that you love teaching. And so I'm curious on the, whenever you introduce the different, you know, the system that you guys are trying to put into place, do you use a classroom setting to do that?
Yeah. So we have in our hitting facility, which just got finished, it'll be 2 years this February. There's a projection screen in there that we use daily. And then, I was just telling my math class about this the other day, but how important it is to film our trainings. So we film our trainings, our practices, and then we utilize that film to instruct the next day prior to training. And then also if we have to pull in, so for instance, I have a Google sheet that has, I don't know, I'd say 175, 200 resources that are linked to specific character traits or specific skills. So if we see where a kid may, isn't showing respect for others or something along those lines, you can just scroll through there and say, okay, respect. Here's a clip or an article or something along those lines, a resource that you could use to teach that. So we teach that in our classroom. And again, that's a lot of that's stolen from Corbs, but I think a lot of people do classroom sessions now, but that's a huge part of our day. And I was telling my sixth grade class, I go off on rants sometimes in there too. They probably get tired of it, but if you thought about putting up a camera in a classroom and just film the day of a student and they get to an assessment, they don't do well on the assessment, but then you bring back in that film from their training, you know, their training leading up to that assessment, how would they score themselves? And does the score in the training match the score on the assessment? And so that's kind of where we are as a baseball program too. So I climb up on top of the backstop, I put an iPad up there, I film the training, and then just ask the players, you know, is the grade that you would give yourself on that training, does it match, you know, the grade or the result we're getting in game situations? So, you know, we had a kid last year, and he wouldn't mind me sharing this, but Sam Sells, who's a heck of a kid, a really good player, he's playing college baseball now at Ohio Northern. He struggled with some of the things early on in the season last year, just in terms of motor and base running during on-field BP. And we showed him the clip, and he's a mature kid, very mature kid, and just owned it. And from then on out, I felt like he trained as well or as hard as almost anybody. He was first team all district kid, led our team in hitting all the way till the last week of the season. But again, that was because of the emphasis we put on the classroom and pulling those things. But again, it goes back to trust too. You can't put film of guys failing up in front of their peers unless you have that trust built in. And so, you know, kind of what happens in that classroom is an intimate place, and it's, you know, a place where they should feel, you know, safe to share things.
No doubt. No, I love that. So I'm thinking about how daunting of a task that would be to film every practice and then cut it up. So can you give me some tips on how you've streamlined it?
Yeah. So I don't know if Chuck Box or Butch or some one of those guys talks about writing down in their note card, you know, times when something would happen in a training environment. So you may have a note card in your back pocket and a kid misplays a fly ball in right field and it's 422. So you write a note card, 422 missed fly ball or something along those lines. So that when you go back to the huddle film, it's easy to find that clip. So I think just having that note card where you can chop it up. We're also lucky. And we had a staff member last year, Abby Finch, who's now a freshman at Charleston. She was we didn't have a great title for her. Originally it was like director of data analytics, but I think she's more director of baseball ops for us. And she would cut up our huddle film from our six mans. And so if you're Matt Wolf, our shortstop, and you went into huddle and clicked on your name, you would see every ball that you fielded in training, every swing that you took.
That's unbelievable.
And she would just cut that up for us and put it in there. So I just think finding people, like I have a sixth grader that's going to start with us this year, and then another kid that's a sophomore. They're both going to do that work for us this year in terms of cutting up film. And again, I'm not going to sit down and watch a 2-hour training session, but if I know it's 4:42, I need to cut that one. Or if I remember an instance within training, I'll pull that stuff. But that's kind of like where my morning work comes in. You know, laugh and they say, oh, you get up really early and you think you're tough because you don't sleep. And it's not that. From 3 to about 5 or from 4 to 5, just depending on the day, I usually am watching that film during season. So we film all of our games as well and just looking for that edge.
Oh, cool. That's really neat. I've thought about doing that idea. And then you think about, well, you know, high school coaches don't necessarily have an analytics program and we all have to teach full time. And and so it's just any ways that we can do a better job of that. It sounds like what was her name? Abby? It sounds like you're going to miss her big time this year.
She got a baseball scholarship to Charleston too.
I'm not surprised. That's awesome.
To do that. We have another kid that was a second baseman for us last year. He's at Syracuse. And he just texted me today and was talking about this data analytics stuff he's doing there. So they're really big into sports analytics.
Awesome.
So I said, if you catch one nugget that you can steal and bring back to our program, I need it. So I think there's plenty of kids that want to do it. Like I said, this sixth grader in my class, he's phenomenal. I think he's going to be really good at what he does. And we were talking about Rapsodo data, and has a very analytical mind. And I think there's plenty of people out there. You just got to find them, I think. But I think they're everywhere in high schools and middle schools.
Well, I think, you know, it's an industry that's going to be continuing to grow, whether it's in baseball or not. Just the analytics and coding and all of that is real world experience versus, you know, the classes that you take during the day, which I think could set them apart. I love that idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, the next thing I think that people like to try and get an idea of who you are and the type of program you run. Obviously really well thought out. So I'd love to hear, you know, your standards and rules. And then I think the next question is, you know, how do you handle the situation when someone doesn't uphold that?
So, you know, there's no rules. There's just standards or things like that.
Sure.
I would say our biggest thing is the communication piece. And that, again, that comes with trust and it comes with giving the kids a voice. But with any of our trainings, like I see some people will say, you know, this kid's 5 for 5 at off-season trainings or 10 for 10 or whatever. I'd like to think that 95% of our guys are 100% at off-season workouts unless there's a valid reason. And what we tell our guys is you can miss for any reason. You just have to communicate with us. So, and we always talk about like gap closing and gap extending, like every day. That's one thing that's going to happen is either a gap's going to close if you're below somebody in skill set level or whatever, or it's going to extend. But as far as our standards and things go, it's just big on communication. And so if a kid doesn't communicate, I'm going to communicate with them immediately and just check in and see what's going on. There's just so many things going on in kids' lives now. But I don't want them to lose sight of the importance of communicating with their coaches or their teachers. And I have 3 kids myself, and I talk to my daughter all the time, the importance of communication. So knock on wood, I just don't think we run into a lot of issues where it's like this kid needs to be reprimanded or this kid needs to be suspended. And again, there are times, obviously, but it's pretty known that if a kid were to miss something or to do, we're going to have a conversation. We're going to talk about it. And again, my first year, it wasn't that easy because I didn't have that trust. I didn't have those relationships. But now, you know, if a kid were to miss something, I would just text him, say, hey, what's going on? Where were you? Talk me through it. I may call him. I may stop him in the hallway at the high school. But we just, we don't run into too many things. I think, again, because the standard's been set, I guess you could say. So if you want to talk about standards, Phil Callahan put it in place when he was the head coach here. We had a really good group of seniors my first year. And then this past year where we were really successful was we had a lot of good leaders and a lot of good kids that just bought into what we were doing. So well, I don't get into too much. Like, again, our you know, people have their core values, but our main thing that we talk to our kids all the time is communication. Just communicate as often as you possibly can. Sure. Speak your mind. Be comfortable talking to your teachers, with your parents, with your coaches, and with your teammates. So,
well, it sounds like to me that you model that by asking them to take ownership and part of the program as well.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Cool. So, you know, I love that it sounds like you put a lot of effort into getting everyone rowing in the same direction, and obviously that to me it sounds like a player's coach in the best sense of the word, and you're giving them opportunities for communication. We talk, you know, you hear 100 coaches talk, and they all in one way or another talk about how they want kids to communicate, but don't necessarily give them those opportunities. And so I think that's really neat. But I'd love to hear, you know, you talk about communication with parents, and that's, you know, something that for colleges they may have to deal with some too. And then pro ball is no, not at all. But with high school coaches, you know, we are still dealing with teenagers who are living at home with their parents. And so I'd love to hear how you communicate with them, how you get on the same page, and how you get everybody, you know, rowing the boat, I guess.
Yeah, this is probably a weakness of mine. I think a lot of parents will say I'm standoffish. I think that would, if you surveyed the majority of them, that's probably what they would say. And it's not so much that. I always say I work for the kids. And so if you can do what's best for kids, you'll never get yourself in trouble. And so for me, if they're taking that message home, and we talk to the players all the time, we have what we call transparency meeting with the players, and we'll talk to them about their roles or about where they're at. And we do those quarterly. So we'll have about four throughout the year and just say, here's where you are now. Here's where we see you in February, or here's where we see you during the season. Please take that message home to your parents and have that conversation. But as far as having direct conversations with parents, I don't have a lot. We have very supportive parents. They're willing to help us out in any way possible. But usually the communication goes from me to the kids to the parents. And obviously if it's something major, and we've had really good conversations this off season, you know, just with COVID and things, I think people are in a different space mentally. And so sometimes we'll have a parent reach out and say, can you check in on my kid? Or, Johnny's struggling with this class. Can you check in on him, or something along those lines, or weightlifting, or whatever the case may be. But I don't have a ton of conversations with parents. It's not that I'm standoffish. I know they probably feel that way at times, but it's more so I don't, even in the classroom, I'm probably the worst when it comes to stepping out of my classroom and collaborating. And it's not because I don't want to collaborate. Like, I actually love reading and listening, and I listen to podcasts all the time and learning from others. But I put the majority of my energy into the kids in the classroom or into my baseball team with the guys. And so I think the innocence of a sixth grade student and just how they are willing to work and care about you, and where I think when we get into adult spaces, it's not always that way. I think there's a lot of stuff that goes on with adults that I'm like, man, I'd rather not be involved in that. So, and not that our parents do that. It's just, I haven't found a need to have regular conversations with parents, and not that I don't want to, because I'm a parent myself, but I think our kids do such a good job. And that's part of teaching them communication, is saying, listen, go home and talk to your parents about this situation. Talk to them about your role. Talk to them about how you feel about the team. Because, you know, I'm sure you've gotten the email where it's a parent saying, Billy doesn't know that I'm emailing you, but, you know, and so my thought always is like, tell Billy, like, have a conversation. Yeah. He loves his role, or he, you know what I mean? We'll talk. I could share. I have a bunch of these text messages that I screenshot and I put in our classroom sessions, and I won't use them until the kids are gone, but their names are taken out of them. But there was one last year where I said to a kid, I said, you know, I know you're not getting a ton of reps. Stick with us. You're doing great things. You're bringing a ton of value to our team. I care about you a lot. And this and that. And he replied back and said, Coach, I'm loving what's going on. You don't have to apologize to me. You talk to me all the time. You're transparent with me. It's a kid that lifted with me before school every day, even during the season. Mm-hmm. And he didn't play a lot. And he still talks to me. We talk all the time. And so if he was taking that message home to his parents, because his parents never talked about playing time, because he understood first. So I think the main thing is communicating really well with your players. then I think that alleviates a lot of the communication that does or does not need to happen with the parents.
No. And I want to highlight that too, because I think, you know, when we get into trouble, all transparency aside, I have never been a head coach. And so I prepare and I start to try and notice things that I would do as a head coach. I think that's what assistants should do. But I also, so I see the kids that we have the most trouble with are the ones that feel like we have given up on them almost. Mm-hmm. And so you just sending that one text, lets him know, hey, I'm checking in on you. Like, your value is not completely based on how much playing time that you get, and you are valuable to our team. And you're telling him that, and makes him feel valued. So where he doesn't go home, and then potentially whenever mom and dad are saying, hey, you're not playing, and they're putting their value in how much playing time that he's getting, then it just snowballs. And that's when I think we all get into trouble, and we may deal with those parents or may not ever deal with those parents. But I think that that's a huge thing that I wanted to highlight that you're doing. And I think that that's awesome. To be able to do that.
Yeah. And those transparency meetings that I mentioned before, and Matt, mm-hmm. of our system, we have those, like I said, four times a year. And we sit down with the players and we say, here's where you're at. What do you think about this? What are your goals? Where do you see yourself? Here's where we see you right now. Doesn't mean it has to be that way, but because we used to get the tryouts in February and a kid wouldn't make the roster and they seemed shocked. And that's not fair to a kid just to be blindsided by that. You know what I mean? Somebody goes, well, a kid should know. He knows if he's not. No, he doesn't. And so you need to talk to them. You need to have those conversations and just say, listen, you know, right now you're behind six guys fighting for four spots. And, you know, you've got to pick it up in the weight room. Don't tell them a week before this. That's like with grades, right? Like, you give a student no grades, and then give them a failing grade like 2 weeks before, or not even two days before the semester ends. Well, I didn't. You gave me no opportunities to show what I know. You never told me what I was missing out on. So transparency meetings are gigantic.
No, that's really good. And so, you know, one thing that I wanted to ask in regards to that is, how do we do those efficiently? Because I'm thinking, okay, so if I was the head coach at the high school where I'm at, I've got, we would have 56 guys. Yeah. And so how do we do that in a way that is efficient, but it's also worthwhile to them to be able to be a part of it?
Yeah, you guys said you're going to have to set aside 3 days, right? And that's what we do. So, three Great to four idea. Per session. We do them in the summertime. So if let's say we're collecting uniforms, that could be a day that we're going to do transparency meetings. So we give collection of uniforms and we put them in every 4 to 6 minute windows and do them over a few days. When we were during COVID times, we did them on Zoom. I like that because I thought it was an opportunity for us to film those and kind of go back and make sure we were communicating properly and just check our use of language and things along those lines. Not bad language, but just how we communicated. But also, I think, yeah, you have to set apart the time. I mean, for us, it's 60. It's roughly 60 right now. When we have tryouts, we meet with every single player. And that takes a full day, not a full day, but a full afternoon to go through. Yeah. But I think the value is there. It's just it's important enough for us where we can set apart 3 days. We have our next set coming up here pretty soon, and we're just going to have to map it out and have the time to put it in and get it done, and just kind of talk to the kids about where we're at and where they think they are and how everything's going. It's a good check-in point.
Yeah, no doubt. I really like that idea. And you know, you mentioned Zoom, just talking about how do my facial expressions, how are they expressed? I can go back and look. And my wife, who's an instructional coach, she said, hey, have you ever watched yourself on film? I was like, no, I don't. Like, it kind of scares me too. I don't know an efficient way to be able to do that. But she said, man, you want to talk about coach improvement, and they do it for teaching. And I was like, man, like, I would love to be able to do something like that. And that could be maybe even just step one of how do I deliver news, whether good or bad, and what does that look like? How is my tone? What do my facial expressions look like? You know, but she has pushed me in that direction. I don't know how or when I'm going to do that, but I think that that's something that's necessary of, you know, even just body language and posture.
Vitally important. Like, that's something we see in our training environment when we watch those films. Mike Deegan once talked to me about miking myself or miking yourself during practice, just to see if are you doing the majority of the talking? Or are you letting the kids talk during an instructional period? What's going on during that time? I think it's important. Again, I think it was 2015 or 2016. I had a kid call me out on my body language at third base, Brandon Horsley, a kid that played for me at Upper Arlington. And he was right. I mean, he was dead on. But again, sure. Trust, right? I mean, trust. And I talked to the kids, I think it was 2019. I talked to them about playing with emotion versus playing emotional baseball, and just mm-hmm. how we have to maintain our even keel as much as possible. Don't get overly emotional. I want you to play with emotion. Don't get emotional. And we end up losing a pretty big game. I don't know, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks later, I lost it on the guys after the game. And again, first year coach of this at Olentangy Orange. And one of our seniors texted me that night and goes, "Coach, was that speech you gave, was it, did you say it with emotion or were you being emotional?" And he was dead on. But the coolest part about all that was, at least in my mind, was he trusted me enough or was confident enough in himself just to say, "Coach, you're wrong. Like, you were wrong. And here's what happened." So I talked to the team the next day and apologized and told him, you know, I was a little upset with the way we performed, but I was emotional and I didn't handle it the right way. So, but yeah, there's trust, there's transparency. I mean, that's where that trust is formed. So.
Sure. No, I listen to that and I think of, man, that's, that would be tough to take. But when we talk about giving feedback and feedback is a gift, I mean, what, especially for you being the head of the program, when you get feedback from players that are working for you and with you, mm-hmm. man, that's like, so I want to know, like, what, when we talk about culture, I think we think a lot of people can see it or can feel it when they're in it. But I want to know, how do you build a culture on a daily basis? And what are just some different things that you do? Transparency meetings, big one. Communication, big one. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, as far as that, I would say you have to be very intentional. And you have to value the time of your players and the time of the people within your program, whether it's your players or coaches. So my hope is that our guys are never like, "Man, I have to go to baseball today," or "I have to," you know, same thing with my math class. I never want a kid to say, "Man, I have to go to math class today." So you have to be very intentional. You have to be very, like, don't have activities in a classroom or drills in a setting that aren't geared towards a desired result. And I think kids, both students and players, can see through, you know, fluffy programming of training sessions or fluffy programming of lesson plans. And so culture, I mean, for us, it's just, I would say if somebody were on the outside looking in, and I think the UMass hockey coach said this, you know, you have a good culture when other teams talk about it, right? So if it's a post-game conversation and the other team's mentioning how attention to detail you are, or how focused your team is, or how much enjoyment they have in playing the game or something along those lines, then you know your culture is right. And so for us, I hope teams on the outside looking in say, you know, these guys, they really pay attention to detail. They care about one another. And they have a lot of fun at doing what they do. I think mm-hmm. some people may, and you're not going to get that from everybody. Some people may look from the outside looking in and not really respect what you do. But for us, I think just being intentional about what we do day in and day out and mm-hmm. really having a plan for what we're trying to get done is what helps our culture.
No, you mentioned, I love that, but you also mentioned the UMass hockey coach. I heard him on a podcast the other day. That was, I think Michael Deegan, who you mentioned, I think he sent it out in his Monday email, mm-hmm. and I listened to it. I've at least listened to it three or four times. So I may even put that down in the resources. That's unbelievable. Are you familiar with the guy, or is that where you heard it?
Podcast, same podcast. Yeah. Yeah, oh, I mean, man, I sent it out to some principals and some assistant principals in the area after I heard it. And I was like, man, it was so good. So good. Because I think about, like, when I watch teams play in our area, so we always ask our players and our coaches, we'll say, like, what's something we do not better than 90% of other teams in the area? And then we flip that and say, okay, what's something we do worse than 90% of teams in our area? And then when we can identify that, to us, that's where opportunity is, right? And so then we look for the low-hanging fruit. And so for me, like, when I watch Hilliard-Davidson football in years past when Brian White was the head coach, you knew what you were getting. You knew it was going to be a tough, run-heavy offense. It was going to punch you in the face. That's just how they played. When you go play Olentangy Liberty in baseball, they're going to play very fast. They're going to run the bases very well. They're going to put a lot of pressure on teams. They're just really well coached. And so for me, that's where that growth happens, and that's how you can refine your culture too, is look at what others do, look at the way they play the game or the way they train or what they do in the off season, and then just steal as many ideas and mold that into what you want to be as a program, you know. And sometimes I'll watch a program train and I'm like, well, we don't want to be like that. And that's fine too. You know, maybe that's their style, but for us, I just try to look at things that programs do, find out why it's successful and how they make it successful, and then see if we can blend it into what we do on a daily basis.